Welcome to Volume 2 in the series, Wasanich, The Saltwater People, with Ksenia, Linda Elliott. This series is dedicated to learning about the unique and rich history of the Wasanich Saltwater People and their traditional connection to their Salish Sea homeland, including Stais, South Pender Island. Ksenia, a Wasanich elder, will speak about the Sinchothan language. She will describe the meaning of some of the place names in and around the Salish Sea, and how her father, the late Dave Elliott Sr., created an alphabet to help preserve the language. Ksenia will share ancient stories, including a story about the creation of the Gulf Islands. She will also speak about challenges faced by herself, her family, and her ancestors due to colonization. Some of the stories in this interview may be unsettling for some listeners, so please take care when listening. This recording was made in November 2023 on the grounds of the Wasanich School Board. This interview begins with Ksenia speaking in the Sinchothan language. She will describe how she became interested in learning the language and how she began teaching it. I am your host, Chris Wakalug, and it is my pleasure to present this series to you. The series is made possible with grants administered by the South Pender Historical Society. I would like to thank my co-interviewer, Robert Dill, president of the SPHS. Without his help, this interview would not have been possible. Both of our voices have been extracted from this final audio in order to give maximum time and clarity to the interviewee to communicate and share their stories. Thank you for listening. Here is Ksenia's story.
As a Ksenia, Tlasin, at Sainich, Chase, Quintalathanus, Jailacha, at Squailta, Sinchathan, Ego Chistang, Sin La Ata, Nantas Likatata, Tangantas Delenang, at the Squailta, E Talmuch. Talmoch and the squail, chlet in a main, eat in a tain, e nantis out wank dieta, chain owl, the muk the stelain on etta. So, my name is Ksenia. English name is Linda Elliott. I work here many years with working on language. I learned the language from my mother and father. And many of the elders that I was very lucky, fortunate to have been able to work with and alongside their first language speakers, like Celilia's two older brothers. I was so lucky to be able to be with them and many of our other elders. You know, they helped us recover and regain our language. I wanted to speak language. I didn't care about teaching it or nothing, but I wanted to be able to speak the language. Mother and father spoke the language all the time to each other, but they didn't teach us. They didn't talk to us in our language. And after I went to high school, I found out, because they had I guess you could call it sort of a mini immersion courses where we weren't allowed to speak English in those classes. It was French and Spanish I took, so we learned those languages. And then I found it relatively easy to learn, so I thought, oh, I can learn my own language. So went home and started pestering mom and dad. Like I always did. Whenever I wanted to learn anything, I'd follow mom around and just keep pestering her till she helped me. Sometimes she'd say, go ask your dad. But dad was the one that was involved in the teaching of the language before many of the elders. There was Chris Paul and our Uncle Ernie Olson. And and Philip Pelkey. They were the main ones that was working before all of us arrived on the scene. We were just young people. I was about 17 when I started with really earnestly trying to understand and learn the language. And then Kanaga ended up, got pushed into the teaching the language. But I didn't want to be a teacher. I didn't feel like I would make a good teacher because I really didn't like school. So I couldn't see myself being a good teacher. But what I found out was through teaching the language and being in school with the children, I had an opportunity to turn their experience of school into something good. And to help them find themselves, to find value in themselves, to find their strength within them, to have a good life. And I think I did that for many young people through teaching our language. A wonderful experience that I never thought I could ever do, but once we got into teaching language, and then we could see that we're never going to get out of it. We're never going to be able to go do something else because there was an urgent need for the language to continue and to keep growing. And so my brother, Sington, Celia, and the other ones, we could see the urgency. So we worked as hard as we could for many, many years. Well, Stayus means a good wind drying place. We hunted ducks in, the early springtime when the winds, you know, the spring winds. There was a nice place there. I always remember Yahuquates are talking about it. When we hunted the ducks at that time of the year, they were opened. They laid flat and put on to, I don't know what you call it, those little sticks that holds it open. And they were cut in such a way that they would be flattened out. And then they were wind-dried. And when they were wind-dried, then they were kept for the winter stores. So I guess the different place names that we're talking about is all part of how we lived our life there. Because for me, I was born in the middle of 10, 11 kids. I had six brothers and there was five of us sisters. And my father was a fisherman. And he lived in a traditional way with his aunties and his mom. They traveled about our territory in a traditional way, and we used our land or our territory as a way of making a livelihood for gathering food and medicines, textiles, and everything that we needed in our world. And so wherever that might have been, that was our Ilanganak, our homeland. All of those islands is our homeland. It's our home because we stayed there and we returned there and we did whatever it was that we went there to do. But we would stay and return to the Saanich Peninsula in the winter. In October, November, we'd come home. And then we rested from November to about the middle of February or something like that, when our people would become active again. And in those times, there were certain things that were carried out. And so when you go to the territory, when in the stay was somewhere, we went to wind dry and hunt ducks. That would be one of the things that would happen there. But and in affairs, or government of Canada, whoever you want to say, assigned us all to reservations. And there was time when we weren't allowed to leave the reservation. And we weren't allowed to gather together to talk to each other. There could never be more than 10 people in one spot talking to each other. So, you know, those kind of things happened along the way. But I was talking about the place names. All of these place names here in the what my father had recorded with the alphabet that he created. So Stais, he says it's a wind drying place. The wind drying, referring to drying salmon and yoquoitsis, it ducks that we hunted. So everything was stored, dried food, eh? Yeah. So wintertime, we never starved. We were very rich people. Our homeland provided everything we needed. And so the different place names that have the stories in that to tell what it's all about. Like, there's a place on Maine, it's called Chichnashata. It means Chaos's footprint. And if you see it, it's a stone, but it's got a footprint in it. But they say that when Chaos was walking there, he left his footprint in that stone, but out of that stone came water. There's a spring, and he was providing water for the people there. I'm trying to think a different way, different places that would have those kind of names. There was a time when the people were walking hand in hand with the Creator. And there came a time when they were given a warning that there was going to be a flood that covered the land. And they were to prepare themselves for the flood. So they gathered up all their food stores and whatever they needed. And they made a long rope. They made a long, long rope made out of cedar bark. And some of the people didn't listen. Some of the people didn't believe that was going to happen. So they didn't listen to the warnings. In our way of life, we have what you call Siawa. Siawa is a person that they kind of look after the people, eh? So that's how they were warned by the Great Spirit or the grandfathers that to prepare themselves for the flood that was coming. So they did, the ones that listened did. And finally the day came when the tide started to come in, as tide started to rise, but it wasn't subsiding, it wasn't going out, just kept on rising. So they put all their possessions in that they needed in to the canoe with their cedar rope. And they got in their canoes. And they paddled towards the, what some of the elders said it was, Tlalocum, that mountain. Oh, Tlalocum is a supernatural being. So that's what they said about it. It wasn't the highest mountain. But they paddled towards that mountain. And they tied their canoes together. And they tied themselves to the top of the mountain to a big arbutus tree that was growing there. And that's where they were when the floodwaters covered the earth. There was no more land to be seen anywhere, but they were in there, drifting in their canoes on the top of this mountain. And their canoes were tied together. They stayed there for the duration of that flood. Many, many days, and they had everything they needed to survive, but the story talks about how they prayed to the good creator to help them to survive, to give them protection to be able to survive the land, this great flood that was covering up the land. And they say that some of those canoes came loose because the waters were rough. And some of those canoes came loose and they drifted away. But the ones that were still there, the ones that were still tied to the top of the mountain, finally came a day when the Squatop came and sat on the front of their canoe, the raven. And he's carrying a stick. He had a stick in his mouth. And then they understood that there must be some land emerging from the water. But off in the distance, one of the men, he seen a top of a mountain in the distance emerging from the water. And the story I was taught says, Ni kwanata husayinach, look what's emerging. And so that was the beginning of the floodwaters receding. And when the floodwaters finally receded and they were able to get off their canoes again, it was on the top of the mountain here, Tlewomo Mountain. We call what people call Mount Newton over here. So they took that cedar rope that they coiled it up in a big pile and left it on the top of the mountain. But before they left there, they gathered around that cedar rope and they gave thanks. They gave thanks to the good creator. And they said, we will be named Husayinach. We will call ourselves Husayinach, the emerging people. And this mountain will be named Tlewomuk, the place of refuge or healing or place of escape. And that's the name of the Tlewomuk. And we're Husayinach. Those of us you see us here now, we're the descendants of the people that survived the flood many thousands of years ago. But our people were here before that flood. All of these place names talks about, for instance, Coquitlam, that's James Point. And it's talking about, it says chest out of the water. meaning the shape of the land. It's like a human being laying on its back and just his testes out of the water. So if you look at it, you'll probably be able to see it. And that's how all of our homeland is described. Is a lot of it has to do with like a human being, eh? Because our islands were created from our ancestors when the Creator tossed them out into the ocean and the deep water, and they became the islands. So that's why we call the islands our relatives, because they are our relatives. The same as all the other things that are here, you know, like deer and all the creatures that you see, whether it's plants or animals or mountains or trees or whatever. The same with the mountains. Creator made the mountains with the... He used this type of stone. It's called Gwynedalus. And it's black, shiny rock, special rock. And he gathered some of those and he tossed them into the ocean, or out into the land, sorry. And they became mountains. There's the whole story about those two, yeah. But when Celilia's talking about our stories and our Tsuyam is our, it's not just a story. It's how this place became how it is, and the reason for this. Ha, it's sacred. Why it's sacred. How it became that way and why it's sacred to this day. So, we're just part of the land, and the land is part of us, eh? Like, that's our family. From the beginning of time, when Files created this place and put us here. There are all many different stories of how things came to be. Yeah. So, I could tell you that in a small way, the Creator, Hiles, is who we call him, traveled about in the territory, our homeland, our Ilamanok, and he was here with us. The Creator was here with us. The saying goes that if you never know who you're talking to, you may be talking to Kyle's. And that's what something it's always repeated. It's always been said. And so when Kyle's was still amongst us, and I do believe he is still amongst us, but it was revealed to me in a dream that because of the way we have become, the way we live, our eyes and our hearts fail to see the magic that is still here. I was told that it never changed. It all still remains the same as it's always been. Everything that the Creator put here and still continues is still here. We fail to see it because of how we think now. Can't see it, but it's still there. That's what I was told. In our traditional way, one of the ways that the ancestors and the spirit world talks to us in our dreams and in ceremonies and sometimes through others, what we see, what we witness. You've probably had the day when you knew that something was you understand that it's more. That's how the Creator made us live here, Saanich people, to walk in a sacred way on His sacred land. He taught us how to walk in a sacred way in our lives on this land here. So our people were very spiritually connected. And I think this, the way our people were, I think it was frightening to the newcomers to see us the way we were. They came with the Christianity. And the Christianity has no room for forgiveness. They don't ever change the way they think. They don't have room for new ideas or anything different. They're very rigid. So when they seen us how we are, they seen us as heathens, they called us. I don't really know what that word means exactly. To us, it seemed like it must be a bad word. But knowing what we do know about Chaos and how he was and how he wanted us to live, if they had stopped to take a good look, they might have found out that our beliefs, we were actually living our beliefs, not far from what they were preaching. When our families became Christian people, a lot of them, they really believed in that Christian religion because I think it wasn't too far from the way we were taught to live on the land, how we lived. But this was actually something that I think they were afraid of us. Why they treated us the way they did treat us and still do in many ways. There's still people that wish us not to be carrying out our sacred ways or our traditional way of life. But had it been another way, when the newcomers come to our land, which I look back and I look at it and I think they came over here because they were running away from the people that were persecuting them for having something different about them, or they wanted to get rich. They heard about our land, so they came over here, and they were looking forward to being free, away from the people that were persecuting them for their beliefs. So when I think about it, and I think when they came here, they were supposed to learn from us. They were supposed to learn how to live in a sacred way. But they couldn't see beyond what had been taught to them or pushed on them or whatever happened to them in their countries or wherever they came from. So instead of learning a new way of life, they continued the way of life that they didn't want and pushed it onto us. Now, when I think about what it would have been like had they had an open heart, had they stopped to think and listen and ask questions, had they had enough respect to understand that we had something to teach people or anyone that wanted to learn, I think that our world would be quite a different place now. Humanity would be farther ahead. They're still trying to get rich. They're still trying to get more. They've already got it all. But they're segments of their own society that they don't care to look after. There's poor people living in the streets that have nothing. And there's no one to care or to reach out to them for their whatever it is that's happening to them. I mean, I realize that they got there probably because of the wrong things that might have happened to them in their life. Just as our people now, suffering from alcohol. And now the young people are suffering from, they're getting into the drugs. It's the last of thing that's happening. Our people got wiped out, eh? We're just a few left here. We got wiped out by many different ways. But a lot of white man disease that came with the people that came here. Because our people didn't have those diseases. So we didn't have any way of protecting ourselves. A lot of people in my time, they died of tuberculosis. So, you know, like my mom took in a lot of children. Their parents were sick and they had tuberculosis, but people were dying, and they had tuberculosis. And mom had, I think she had about 10 kids there one time, besides her own kids, just looking after them because their parents were in hospital, at TB hospital. And the kids didn't have nobody, so my mom was looking after all these little children. I don't know how long she did that. I know that we thought those kids were just part of our family. Yeah. But when they'd go home, it would be really sad. Well, we lived pretty traditional way too, I guess. But by then, you know, we were all going to school. My mom, she was like 4 years old. They took her to boarding school. Her and my auntie. My mom was 4, but my mom never got out of boarding school till she was 16. And when you're a little child, you know, you need somebody to love you. And those children weren't loved. They were in jail. Many of the children that went there died at the hands of their supposed caretakers or people that were supposed to be their teachers. Or a lot of those priests and the nuns were pedophiles. And their way of thinking towards us was, they were very cruel people. One of the ladies that we work with, she used to live down not far from my family, and she told me one day, she said she had 10 brothers and sisters, and one day the priest and the ending agent came and took all her brothers and sisters when they were playing outside. They took them away. They basically kidnapped the children from the reserve. So they took her family, and she was the only one left with her mom and dad. But the things that happened to them while they were gone. She said, she had 5 brothers. Only one came home. And the sisters that came home, the oldest sister had a baby she didn't want. She asked her why. She didn't want her baby. She wouldn't tell her. But she was raped in boarding school. That's why she didn't want that baby. She was a child. Nobody ever talks about those things. It's horrible. It's horrible to talk about it. It's horrible to tell you about it, but somebody should know. Her brother starved to death in the basement. She said because they wouldn't stop speaking our language. So they locked them in the basement and they died there. No one ever wrote home and said, your child died here. No one ever knocked on her door and said, we took your kids. She didn't know where they were. Her mother cried. She died of a broken heart. So did my grandmother. Because they took her kids. The children came home. They were alienated from their language because when you're repeatedly tortured for speaking some of your own language, you're scared to do it. And many of the young people that came home were afraid to speak their language. And they intended it to be that way, so that our language would disappear. Because within the language is a whole worldview and way of life. The way of seeing the world and how you interact with it. So that's how they wanted, that's how they brainwashed us and changed us and made us into brown white people. Our young people are suffering from a loss of identity. Our young people, many of them are lost and dying. Many of them are committing suicide because they're disconnected. They're not white people. They'll never be. Yet they're not the people they were born to be either. Many, many of our young people commit suicide. And I believe it's because they feel lost. I believe that our language is the most important thing that we have. We don't have our land anymore. We've been squashed into these tiny little places, the reserves. Our children don't have anywhere to live. Our children don't have a place to go to make a home. Yeah, we look. There's a farmer. He's got one house and 80 acres of land sitting there. You never see anybody doing anything with that land, is what they just wanted to possess, call it theirs. And if we were to go there and sit down and make a fire or try to pick some berries or gather some food or whatever, they'd be there to kick us out. But you know, Native people talk to each other. One girl, she was in Nova Scotia, this was over the pandemic. She was living with her boyfriend and he was working her away or something, and she had a prowler in her home. So she called her mother because she was afraid and told her mom. So her mom called the police. And the police went to her home. And she was in the home, but she was holding a knife. But she didn't know who was coming in her home. She was by herself. But what the police did was they shot her. They didn't just shoot her once. What we heard was they shot her 6 times They didn't stop to ask any questions or anything. Sartlip Indian Day School. That's what school me and Celia went to. And it was here, this school, right here. And I think it was 1980s or something, it burned down. We ended up replacing the school ourselves with the, we had to convince the DIA to replace our school because they didn't want to replace it. But a lot of the mothers and community members really campaigned to have that school replaced. And after that, it continued on to be still, it was still run by the Catholic Church, the priests and the nuns for a while. Then, I don't know, the Catholic Church must have went through some kind of change or something. I don't know what happened, but that those nuns that used to teach us, their order of nuns changed. I don't know if they disbanded or what, I don't know. But they weren't here anymore. And so we had lay people come and teaching us after that. And then finally our community members, especially the mothers, wished to make our own school board so that we could be in charge of our own, what we teach our children. So that took place in around late 70s or mid 70s, somewhere around there. And I'm glad of the mothers, you know, they drove the bus for the kids. They didn't get no pay or nothing. They had these little vans. They converted them into little buses for the kids. And the mothers would go around and pick up the children and bring them to school. And finally, when they did make our own school board, that's when we decided to put our own name on the school, even though the name, what they were trying to say was Huchatlisp. It's the name of this place here. It means place of the cedar rope. So we renamed our school, that our new school board. We became our own school board, and that's when we put our own name on the school, and we named our school after our sacred mountain. It's where we come from, where it's how we survived. That's why we're here. That Lewung helped us survive. So in a way, you think about it, and our little children are in a different kind of a blood. We're still struggling to retain our own identity and our language, our own teachings and our way of life, to help them to get a way to feel connected back to our homeland and our Elongunup, our territory. Squeal at the Solhuenta, the language of our ancestors, our Chilangan, our way of life. And so, Lewungoh is a very good name for our school to help our people and our young children. So, it's a sacred name, named after the mountain that saved us from the Great Flood. Our children, I wish for them to have a a good understanding of our way of seeing life, our way of seeing the world. Help them to walk in a good way and in our own way, our own beliefs. Because I think that the world population in general is kind of lost. Their way of doing things is not sustainable. That's the terrible greed that they came here with that has caused all this destruction. Our land is in need of healing, and our people are in need of healing. And that language is, I still think that's the healing that we need. Many things, the understanding of life. And so this is what I wish for our future leaders, those children over here. That's a Satanich leadership school over here. We're preparing our young people to become good leaders for our families in the future of Saanich. That we will be able to recover some of the ways of our own people and how our traditional way of life. I wish for our young people to be able to have their own language and have their own understanding of our land, our homeland, our Ilocano, and to be able to carry out our future in a good way for the Saanich people. Not to be afraid anymore. Not to hide their beliefs. Not to hide who they really are. Not to be afraid to speak. Even though there's many people that still believe that we don't have the right to speak out. So I think that right now we're having a tough time because of the disconnection. Colonization is nearly complete. Those of us that still survive in these bodies, the hearts and the minds and the spirits of our people, many of them are lost. We wish to help them to find their way home. I'd believe that there's many people in other parts of the world, that indigenous people that have similar way of looking at life. Our land was in beautiful, pristine, bountiful when the newcomers came here. I know that nowadays some people don't even know we still exist because they've never written anything in any history book. They don't talk about us in the history book. They talk about England and Europe and Spain and all these other places, but they have nothing to tell about us. Except for when I was in grade 8, I remember that. One afternoon we had history lesson. They're reading from this history book. They start talking about Native people. And the nun was reading from the book. And she said that Native Indians are dirty, lazy drunkards. That's what was written in the history book. I was a pretty quiet child. I never spoke out. I never said nothing. That's how we were taught to be. But when I looked around, and there's all these Polynetums sitting in the room, And I'm the only Native person sitting there listening to this nun teach these people that we're dirty, lazy drunkards. I stood up in that class. And I told her, I said, I'm Indian. And I said, none of my family is dirty, lazy, or drunkards. I said, this, what they're saying in this book is a lie. They blacklisted me. From then on, wherever I went, wherever I walked in that school, there was somebody following me. They were trying to figure out a way to get rid of me. They didn't want me there. They eventually did. They got rid of me. But I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry for telling the truth. I'm not sorry for letting that nun and all those other girls know that that's not the way it is. I think one thing that our father and mother taught us was to be truthful. My dad used to say there's only one word. He says that word is kainkan. Kainkan means a liar or a thief. And he says, if you're a liar, then you're a thief. Or if you're a thief, then you're a liar. And there's so many different kind of ways of ways to talk like that to us. We used to talk about how our people were. Nobody would ever steal from another person. We would never take or touch something that didn't belong to us. Our grandmother used to tell my dad, she'd say, if you see something laying down, leave it there. Because whoever put it there or whoever left it there is going to come back for it. They're going to come back and get it. She said, even if it's a needle laying on the road, leave it there. It belongs to somebody. That's how our people were. When we went fishing or anything, they leave their canoes, their fishing gear, nobody would ever touch it. Nobody would ever touch that. That belongs to somebody. That kind of respect, eh? Yeah.
Thank you very much to Kwesinia for doing this interview. This interview and the entire series has been made possible with funding from the Capital Regional District, the Pender Island Community Resource Center, the Wasanich Leadership Council, Wasanich School Board, the Pender Islands Museum, and the South Pender Historical Society. Thank you to all these organizations for contributing to make these recordings possible.